Welcome everyone to another episode of Ask the CFI. My name is Chris Palmer. I'm a flight instructor in Alaska. I have a flight school here, and this is my opportunity every Monday to answer your questions. So I take these questions on Instagram and I answer them live on Instagram on Mondays. And then the following week, I post it here on YouTube, and you'll hear it also on the podcast for you guys to hear some questions from the aviation community. This is great content to just absorb, you know, turn on and listen to as you're working on other things. I ask you to subscribe. That's really good for some of the great content that's coming soon. And also, you know, Ask the CFI. We do podcasts every week, and we're starting to do vlogs again, flying vlogs. So lots of great stuff coming from Angle of Attack. Maybe too much. Maybe there's too much for you guys to go through. But please subscribe, whether it's here on YouTube or on podcasts, all right? This whole process, this whole thing is meant to help you. So these questions, again, are submitted on Instagram Sunday night and Monday morning, and then I answer them during the day sometime on Mondays, where I just answer your questions. You know, you guys need help in aviation, whether it's flying questions or aviation career questions. Anything technical, from written test questions to oral test questions or check ride questions, all of the above, here to help you guys out and happy to do so. So let's get into it. Here's a round of questions from this week on Ask the CFI, and any of these you can search in the description below. All right, let's get right into it. Okay, interesting question. As a very new student, what do you recommend I do to learn and study both towered and non-towered airport communications? So I get this question quite often, and you know, you aren't alone in the fact that it's a struggle to learn communications. That's just common for so many people. And so don't beat yourself up about it, first and foremost. I think that a lot of people get really scared on the radio and they don't want to sound dumb, but we've all been there. We've all sounded dumb. So kind of give yourself a break, first and foremost, that you're learning, and it's okay not to sound perfect all the time. So from there, a couple different tips. First is just being able to first hear what you need to know in the pattern and how to sift through the reduced audio quality and the vocabulary that you're going to hear. A great way to do that, to get used to that, is go to liveatc.net. They also have an app. I use the app or the website when I'm out watching airplanes or other things, but you can pull up many different airports in the nation, many, many different airports in the world, really. And you can listen to communications. Now, that's something that you can do just right now. You can have live ATC going all the time from your home. It can be just on in the background. You can be listening to those communications. What we want to do with those communications is not only learn to hear it well, so just getting used to how fast it is and being able to hear the vocabulary, but obviously we want to understand it as well. And the big thing for me with communications, especially when we're talking about airport communications, is we want to be able to build a 3D picture in our mind on what is happening out there. So that if someone calls in and says they're entering the downwind, we know exactly where to look in the sky and see them, especially if we are working in the pattern as well. The whole idea here is to avoid conflicts. So that is my advice, is not only should you be able to hear it all, but you need to be able to build that picture in your mind of where to actually look, and then know what to do also in those situations where you're unclear of either the instruction you're getting from air traffic control or from the radio call you heard from someone else. Because this whole exercise we're doing is for collision avoidance. We don't want to hit someone, so you need to make sure you are clear on the communications. All of that doesn't necessarily help you make the radio calls. Listening and building that picture is a little bit different than actually saying something. And this does just take practice, but I think something that you can do that's fairly simple is just go out in a parking lot, maybe in the street in your neighborhood, and walk the pattern and make the radio calls one after the other. So pretend like you have a pattern, pretend you know where the runway is, and then make those radio calls, okay? You can even step outside and do like a midfield entry. You could do a downwind entry, all sorts of different things to just help you get used to saying those communications And then that will help you also when you're saying, listening, building that 3D picture in your mind, kind of all those things put together. So my advice is just to, I guess we call it chair flying a little bit in this case, but just emulate that like in a parking lot or in the street. I think that's a good thing to do. So basically this person is asking, I want to refresh my ground school. How do I do that? Honestly, I think that even the video ground schools out there that are available are very helpful. I do like the PHAC. I have the Jeppesen manual as well. I have a lot of books behind me here on my shelf. So yeah, I mean, if you're going to refresh stuff or keep things fresh, absolutely have those materials available. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to go through ground school again and refresh that knowledge every several years. So that's something to look at as well. I do offer ground school at angleofattack.com. Sean James, what is the procedure to come over to Alaska and finish my commercial license? I often have students that come here, that travel here and stay here for a little bit and do that. So the best thing to do is just to contact me, whether that be through direct messages here on Instagram or through my website at angleofattack.com. But I definitely help people finish stuff up. There are some things I can't do, like I don't have a TAA or a complex airplane, so you'll need to get that time done first, but I'm more than happy to help and talk to you about that. This is an interesting question, but I'm actually going to point you in a different direction. If I wanted to get into flight sim, what are the basics I would need for a home setup? I actually did a live stream on, or rather a webinar, I guess is a better term, on Friday with 4Flight, and we talked a lot about this. So go to that 4Flight webinar and you will see it there. That's where I discuss a lot about flight simulation. So go and check that out. When descending from cruise, say at 8,500 feet and leaned, do you mixture rich as per landing procedure? It just kind of depends. I think for me, it really just depends on the airplane and how much altitude I'm losing. I'll usually do a little bit of at a time, like a couple twists of the knob as I'm coming down. I do typically land nearer sea level here in Alaska. I know we have a lot of mountains, but the mountains basically come right out of the ground, right out of sea level, right out of the ocean. Sometimes that's what our mountains here in town are like. So yeah, I typically just enriching it a little bit as I'm coming down rather than one big shot all at once. 8,500 feet is pretty high. Just feel like you can conserve a little bit better by doing something like that. This was a question I liked from earlier. Is there a difference in students who completed their ground and written before they fly? Absolutely there is. And this is one of the reasons why when someone comes to my flight school, I require them to have their written test done first. Because really as an instructor and kind of like a, I don't know if I'm a boutique flight school or I'm a small flight school, right? It's like me, it's one airplane. I do very like specialized or focused, I guess is the better term, training. And I want people to show up and be ready to go. Like I'm not interested in just doing one-off flights with people that are semi-interested in flying. Of course, I do lots of discovery flights. If you're in Alaska and you want to fly and get that opportunity, absolutely. All those things are on the table. But people that come and want to do their license, like say they're locals and they're not committed, I'm not really interested in that. I want people to achieve their goals. I am going to lean in and work really hard, and I want them to lean in and work really hard. So when I start training, I want to see them complete their ground school first and then their written test, and then we can move forward from there. Just because things go so much faster, I feel like in a way I'm taking from the person because they won't know the vocabulary, they won't know a lot of things, and they'll be learning all that in the airplane, which isn't a great place to learn those things for the first time. So yeah, it's a requirement for me at my flight school. This was a question I saw come across. I get every now and again, what's your opinion on accelerated flight training for PPL? Now, the definition of accelerated flight training, I think would need to be approached a little bit, but what I'm going to guess that you're saying is some of these 2-week private pilot courses that are out there. I do not think they're good. I think it takes a much longer time to become a more well-rounded, well-thought-out pilot. If you're getting your private pilot done in 2 weeks, theoretically, it's possible. There's plenty of hours in the day to get to that 40-hour mark, but are you really focusing on those things that are important for you? Are you really absorbing all those lessons that are so important during the training process? And what I've noticed is that the answer is no. I've had friends go through it. I've seen many people try to go through it. And I'd rather see a well-rounded pilot than someone that just gets it done. This, we have a lot of things in today's society that are kind of life hacks or things that are done quickly, you know, instant gratification. And that's just not how I believe aviation works. I have those things in my life that I enjoy that are instant gratification things. I do enjoy fast food every now and again. I love my internet being fast. I enjoy all of my media being like at my fingertips. I enjoy all that, right? But when it comes to flight training, when it comes to doing something really important, critically important for safety, like getting a private pilot license, I don't think you can rush through it. So I don't recommend those sort of courses. Number one tip for the CFI ride. So what I tell everyone when they go to the CFI check ride is this is going to be unlike any check ride you've done before. Typically, when you go to a check ride, you are essentially role playing or proving that you can fly the airplane, that you have the knowledge to fly the airplane, and you're having the examiner essentially ask you to do certain things and perform. So when it comes to CFI, it kind of switches, the roles switch. Now your role is a teacher or a mentor or a coach, however you want to perceive that. But now you are going to be giving that advice to your DPE and role playing as though your DPE is a student. There will be several things that you go through during the oral portion of your check ride that are just, you know, showing that you know your stuff. You're going to do the paperwork right. You know how the nuts and bolts work of getting someone from zero to hero, if you will. But when it comes to the actual flying and much of the ground where you're actually teaching, it is about the teaching. It is about that role playing. So embrace that role. Really buy into it that this examiner knows nothing and that you are going to teach them this material, okay? Ask them questions, get feedback, you know, take it from different angles, just as you would do with a real student, all right? That is my number one tip for a CFI check ride, because a lot of people don't realize that is how it is conducted differently. What am I doing to stay current amongst all of this? Very good question, and I think it goes in line with the advice that I've been giving you guys. I may go flying this afternoon, actually. I haven't been flying in a while. I'm not going to fly with anyone. I'm going to fly solo and be very careful about that. Basically meaning I'm going to wipe down everything after I'm done. So there is some flying still involved in staying on top of it. But I know a lot of you can't do that. And so really, actually, I think the biggest thing I've been doing is, A, I'm in this every day. I mean, here I am, you know, teaching still. I'm continuing to teach other things, keeping that knowledge fresh. And I actually want to learn some new things. So I plan on learning some new things during this process as well. I have a couple courses that I'm enrolled in, namely from Rod Machado. Really like him. Don't mind pumping his stuff. So I'm going to be going through some of his courses to just get up to snuff better on some different topics. But I also think it's a really great opportunity to move forward and teach you guys even more. So that is largely the role I'm taking, but I also want to learn during this process too. So I'm kind of in a lucky position where I can fly the airplane solo and still do a lot of great things there, teach you guys, et cetera. But I still have a lot that I can do on my own too. Really simple answer to this question: what is the best way to build hours with a private pilot license? And the way that I built hours is I went somewhere. And I know that sounds kind of silly, like, but really, if you're just going to go beat up the pattern, you're not getting as much of a return on your investment for doing your pre-flight, for doing all your, you know, pre-flight planning and pre-flighting the airplane and all that stuff. Like, you're doing a lot of extra work just for a little bit of time. So my point there is that when you get in an airplane and you go somewhere for a while, maybe a long while far away, and then you come back, those hours really start to add on. So the more opportunities you can find to do that, your hours really, really build. And really, that's the only way to do it. If you're just going to go beat the pattern in an airplane, it is exhausting work and doesn't need to be that intense. Really, you're actually learning a lot more when you're on the road anyway. So I would definitely suggest that you build that muscle of cr- cross countries, flight planning, dealing with weather because you're switching between weather systems even as you're going along and seeing all sorts of different things, new airports, new runways, new challenges. Those are all things that are actually the reason why we're required to build ours as experience. Those are the types of lessons that the FAA is intending for us to learn. So I always say, just get in a plane and go somewhere. And that's the best way to build ours, as silly as that sounds. Haven't flown in 4 years. Where do I start? First off, you know, you're obviously out of your flight review, so you need to be flying with an instructor to fly. You can't just go out and start. So the big thing here is starting with your study before you go to that actual flight review. So you are going to want to get up to snuff on your airspace, on operations of the airplane, on flight planning, you know, a bunch of different topics that you're not used to. When you go to your flight review, they only require in the regulations to do 1 hour, but if you haven't been flying for 4 years, you're going to need more than 1 hour to get up to snuff. Now, I don't think you need to get to check ride readiness through a flight review. If you want to, that's fine, but I think you get to the point where you're safe and you can go out there and start to practice again on your own to dial in your landings, your maneuvers, the other things that allow you to be a safe pilot, okay? The big thing I want to see people work on when they're out for that long is we really do need to get back to the basics of aerodynamics with the airplane. We need to talk about stalls. We need to fly stalls. We need to talk about spins. We don't necessarily need to fly the spins. We need to do slow flight. We need to bring those things back to the pattern and talk about the challenges of those in the pattern and why we're actually practicing them anyway. And then get into being able to fly the airplane comfortably, slower while we're working on landings, takeoffs, et cetera. Because really what happens is I find over time is that people add one knot here and one knot there as they go throughout their career, and they end up adding way too much energy to the airplane. And then some unsafe things can happen from there. Or on the flip side, they don't understand the critical nature of flying slow, too slow, uncoordinated, et cetera. So we need to bring all those things back to the fore and work on them. How do you keep your CFI knowledge up as a newly rated CFI? By practice. You need to just be doing enough of the CFI thing to keep things up. Now, you know that every 2 years you're going to be doing a flight instructor refresher course. That's just fine. I'm actually looking for opportunities just from day to day with some of my colleagues and things to be even more aggressive than that. So even though I only have to do it every 2 years, maybe if the opportunity comes up to do it once a year, I do that. You know, if there's a course that's local, I could do every 6 months. Absolutely. Like, just start to get more and more and more experience and perspectives and keeping it fresh so that it just becomes second nature. If you're actively instructing quite a bit, that kind of naturally happens a lot of the time, but you definitely do need to go back and refresh things again. Every now and again. Who would you recommend spin training to besides certificates that require it? I think spin training would be interesting if everyone could do it. I know that for me in a Part 141 program, I had to do it. I think it was required by our syllabus. So I did do it during my private pilot training. I really actually appreciated that was the case, even though I wasn't the one flying the plane or recovering from the new maneuver, I at least got to see it. Doing it as a CFI for your CFI spin endorsement was very helpful. I just think that it's something that a lot of people should do. You need to know what you're doing though. Just don't go up in a regular plane and do it. Like, the weight and balance has to be specific. The plane has to be able to do it. I actually think it's better to do it in something that's meant for it. Than just go up and try to do it in any airplane. I just think that there's a little bit of a safety factor there that we need to be careful about, because people have gotten in the spins and they haven't recovered. I just want to be really careful with that. So yeah, just go out there and do it. It'd be pretty easy to go take an aerobatic class of some kind, even just a little introductory quick somewhere, even something in a Citabria or similar, to be able to to do that. So yeah, definitely recommend that. Tips for staying proficient during this time. I did a whole podcast on this very recently within the last few weeks. So go and check out Aviator Cast. You can go to aviatorcast.com. I do video podcasts, so you can see those on YouTube, or you can subscribe through iTunes or Twitter, or not Twitter, but iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You can find everything there. What's your opinion on how on having a minimum maneuvering speed in the pattern? You know, I have my students fly the pattern a little bit slower than most. I have them put in a notch of flaps in the downwind, and I don't have them reduce their power until they're turning base. I know that's a little bit different. I even learned differently than that, but two things are accomplished there. A, it slows things down for them in the downwind, and they can get more used to the setup and the running their checklists and everything, make sure they're set for landing rather than rushed. And then it's almost like we're doing a power off from the base turn to touchdown. It's closer to power off than it would be if we were just reducing power a little bit. So I like that idea of them knowing how to manage the energy of the airplane just within the wing rather than with the power. So that's how I do that. In terms of minimum maneuvering speed, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at there. I think we got to be careful in the pattern. I wouldn't want to be flying things slower than I am just because I don't want to set my students up to be flying too slow at some point. So that's my thoughts there. Should I become a CFI so I can build hours? My advice to everyone who's thinking of becoming a CFI is only do it if you really love teaching and you are going to take care of people. I see a lot of people just getting their CFI to build hours and they have no passion to teach somebody. They don't really take care of them. They're just there to build hours. I don't like that, okay? Granted, there are still going to be people that are pushed through funnels that kind of require them to do that, but I'm really big on CFIs actually doing their job and really helping people out. And I'm big on you out there as a student finding a CFI that is like that and basically dumping someone that's not. So that's my perspective. So if you are going to give that to people, if that's what you're going to offer, then absolutely go for that. But if you aren't passionate about it, don't think you're passionate about it, then you're not doing anyone favors and it's probably best to build your time in other ways. What are your thoughts on getting my commercial rating before my instrument rating? If you're not going to use either one right away, I think it's just fine. There are people that somehow just have a lot of hours and they get their commercial done first before they do their instrument. I think that's just fine if you go that direction. You know, instrument out of all of them, I think it is one of the hardest and most important ones to get right. And so if you need to get that right in a different way, like getting your commercial first, then I'm all for that. So that's kind of my perspective. Your story is your story. Your path is your path. If that's how things are shaking out right now and you're already at that 250 hour mark, then I don't see why you shouldn't just go for it. Working on private and studying for the oral, any tips? So I do have a CheckRide course on my website. CheckRideAce.com is the kind of the direct link to it, or you can go to angleofattack.com. I start out that course with a lot of mindset sort of stuff because people get really fearful of check rides. You know, it's probably the reason you're asking this question right now. Any tips for the oral, etc. This isn't going to be an interrogation, okay? The best thing you can do is prepare really well, study all you need to know. I have a study guide with this course, but study what you need to know and then go there and be the pilot that you are going to be. What I mean is the decisions you make as a private pilot, the flight planning you make as a private pilot, the everything that goes into it, okay? How you're thinking through certain things, how you're mitigating risk, how you're making the go, no-go decision. All of those things are going to be seen and discussed in practice with the examiner, and that's what it's all about. So it's like a real-world test. It's actually kind of nice. It's a real-world test to do right there in their presence that shows you know what you're talking about and you're going to perform as a safe pilot. That is why the examiners exist, to make sure that you are going to be a safe pilot. So the knowledge is only part of it. Your attitude, your decision-making is a much bigger part of it. The way you fly is also not number one. Again, number one is the decision-making, the safe decision-making. So all of those things kind of come together. Don't expect to be absolutely perfect, but prepare yourself to what you think is almost a perfect level and just go in, relax. It's going to be fine. And just be who you are going to be. And that's it. Then you should get your ticket at the end. So I'm excited to hear how that goes for you, Captain Luke. Yeah. And I go through more of that in that Check Right Ace course if you're interested. It doesn't take too long to go through, and I think it just sets people up really well. Along those lines, best way to prep for the Check Right, or rather the written and the Check Right, I really think that like a Check Right prep course is great. That's why I created one. There aren't a lot of them out there that are specific just for the Check Right, but that's what mine does. But then for the written test, you know, in our ground school, I teach that as well, how you actually take tests, how you go through and do that. But I did do a podcast on it quite a while ago. It's about an hour long. It's called The Pass in Passion. If you search that, The Pass in Passion Aviator Cast in Google, that podcast will pop up. It tells you my testing strategies, and not cheating, not even rote memorization, but the actual practice of learning a bunch of stuff, answering all the questions you need to answer, and then working through those things that are a little bit more difficult for you. So you actually know the material rather than just memorize it, which I think is a much more powerful position to be in. How do you take care of night requirements during Alaska summer? Do students just wait till winter? So there is, in the regulations, there is an exemption for Alaskans to not do their night training. So I've had to do it before. Basically, the person has to get their night training within a year. So you would take care of it during the winter time. Because here in Alaska, we're at a very high northern latitude and the sun doesn't, we have a lot of light. Like you would have very little time to do your night training if you even could, because some places the sun doesn't go down. So yeah, it's definitely something we need here. Kind of interesting. Just 10 hours in, any advice on getting nauseous during flight training? Yeah, a couple pieces of advice. Make sure that you're eating something before you go. Not a lot of people know this, but it's something that fishermen know and people that spend time on the water. An empty stomach actually doesn't help well with your nausea, because basically the fluids in your stomach are moving back and forth and it's kind of making it even worse. So if that's kind of what you're talking about there, actually having a solid meal before or something that is solid, even if it's a snack, something would help. Chips. I think chips are a great thing. Like I really like the pita chips, I think help out a lot. And then making sure you're not drinking like soda before, you know, I remember having some challenges with this as well, especially when I was working on VOR training in my private pilot, I got pretty sick and it's because I had a Mountain Dew before. So just be smart about what you're putting in your body before you go flying. Now, there are some ways to get around, say, bumps. Okay, so if you're experiencing bumps while you're flying and that's your issue, flying earlier in the morning can really help out with that, or in the evening, or even at night. I know night isn't necessarily conducive for a lot of visual maneuvers, but those are times where you'll have fewer bumps. Okay, I even know of a woman that was very nauseous during the daytime, and for whatever reason at nighttime she did very well. So she had to do her private pilot training basically all at night. So that's kind of interesting. This is a good question. So I don't get a lot of medical questions, but I do know quite a bit about getting a medical certificate. I have a first class medical, but I have to get mine every year. That is outside the normal frequency, meaning my medical is not good for any class after a year. So technically it does go from like a first to a second class. But anyway, all that aside, I know quite a bit about medicals because I have to deal with it all the time, because I have some stuff that I deal with, and a lot of people do. Most people do, I think. So would a second class medical be important for someone who wants to be a CFI but currently working on PPL? And my perspective when I first started flying was, hey, I want to make sure that these future jobs that I'm looking toward, and at the initial point, it was airlines, not looking forward to that anymore. But I wanted to make sure that I could get the medical for that job. So I did do my first class medical when I started to make sure that I could meet that higher requirement. And that is still something that I do because I want to know I'm meeting that higher requirement. Maybe if something were to change, who knows what, and I did end up in the airline somehow. I want to just know that I'm meeting the highest standard, okay? So yeah, absolutely, I would get your second class medical now. Your medical as a whole is gonna be valid for just as long. It's just that you'll go from a second class and it'll expire into a third class and you'll still have all that time available, but you'll know that you qualified for that higher class, okay? Real quick, what do I think about Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020? I think it looks amazing. I do have a bit of a flight simulator background, and I think it looks pretty dang cool. So we'll see how everything pans out there. Yeah, good question. And someone from Italy, and hope you guys are doing much better there. It seems like you're on the downward curve now. We've all been watching and praying, making sure everything goes well. So you've had a lot of the world behind you during this process, but what's the story for general aviation in your country? Here in Italy, we cannot fly. It's not as restrictive as simply you cannot fly. I think they're just expecting people to be smart about it. I am not flying with students, so it's kind of my choice, right? But I'm not flying with students because I'm not sure it really qualifies anyway in my particular state. So just the way the United States works is even though we have a president and we have a federal government, we have Congress and everything, the states themselves actually have a lot of power of their own and their own rights. And so how this crisis has been managed so far is the states have power to decide what they need to do to manage things for their area, which I think is actually a fairly wise decision because Alaska is not New York and we need a different strategy. We are taking a very aggressive strategy here for it being Alaska because of the vulnerability of our native villages. So aviation at large has shut down here. And while some people argue that flying or flight training specifically is an essential service, I think regardless of people saying it's an essential service, I think it's irresponsible right now to get into an airplane with someone else when so much is happening. If we make this short, we can get over it. I had someone from Florida, which is not somewhere that is doing very well. They are up there on the list of cases and deaths and things. And I had someone from Florida I was having a back and forth with on Facebook several days ago that was saying that the federal government said that flight training was an essential service and that it was okay that they kept doing that. And I definitely do not agree with that. You're in a canister with someone. You're spreading this virus potentially. I know that it could be argued that it's not as deadly as they say, or it's not as transmissible as they say, but all of that aside, we're all just trying to do a job right now. And anyway, it's not all shut down, but I think that we do have a responsibility to be prudent there as well. I look at all of this as like from a safety mindset as a pilot. And if I'm going to go on a cross-country flight, and there's like a 2% chance or like a 50% chance or whatever it is of transmission, right? There's like a 50% chance I could get into a bad situation. And then from that bad situation, there's like a 3% or 4% chance that I could die. Like I will avoid that flight for the rest of my life. I will never take that flight. And so that's kind of what I think this virus stuff is about. You know, some of those numbers I see, I'm like, those are high numbers. We don't need to be hanging out together right now. Let's just play it safe. And for some of you, you could argue I'm being way too over the top there, but I'm just being careful. Here's a fun one, just because it's different. As a CFI in the US, do you have any tips on teaching the round out and flare? I do. I have a lot of things in my toolbox that I teach people. A lot of things change when you go from your normal approach to that round out and then into the flare. You know, I've heard everything from looking down the runway, which I think is the number one mistake people make, is they stare at the ground right in front of them. And without looking down the runway, they can't align and they can't judge their height very well. And so you tend to be off alignment and slam it in without looking down the runway. So as you round out and you're slowly drawing that power back, you draw your eyes down the runway. And the way that really clicked for me in private pilot training is looking out the periphery of my vision to see where the ground was rising up. So not so much looking forward, almost blanking that out, and just focusing on what was happening here helped me a lot in my private training. But there's also some interesting perspectives on the parallax effect of going from approach and then the runway's rising and people get freaked out and round out and flare too high and then come down and slam. There's a lot of interesting perspectives on most people being right-handed. And if you're right-handed, you're more likely to be right eye dominant, but we're flying in the left-hand side of the airplane. So your right eye isn't actually doing a lot of good work being right in the middle of the plane. So there's even been tips of actually looking to the left and using your right eye to judge the height of where you are a little bit. So I think that tip can help people as well. And then just holding it off the runway and not too high, but not too low, you know, use that ground effect. And I think you're good. You know, it just takes practice. It takes practice with all of those tips, even to find out what works for you. Too much energy during that process is hard. So that's why I'm a big stickler on airspeed and energy when you're landing, because if you're too fast, especially, you tend to just float forever, and it becomes really difficult because then you're slow and the airplane is constantly changing its energy state, and then the air is acting upon you. It just gets really tricky. So I'm not saying that it's not important to fly on speed. You definitely don't want to fly too slow, but I'm saying that most people don't realize that flying too fast is also a safety issue. So that's my thoughts there. Hope that helps. Good question here. What parts of the regulations do I need to study to eventually open my own flight school, freight and people moving service? All of those things are kind of different. So depends on what type of people you're moving, if it's scheduled or unscheduled. Freight kind of seems like the people moving thing could all fit within part 135. And then a flight school, actually, it's super simple to set up a part 61 flight school. So that's not too difficult. But yeah, the part 135 is really where all the regulations are for the freight and the people moving service that you've got. So I know you, man, hope you're doing good. And maybe that's something you're looking to do a business once you get out of the military. That's what I look toward, but also take it one step at a time. Okay, I don't want to offend anyone by forgetting someone, but what are your top 5 to 10 general aviation YouTubers? I think there really are only 5 to 10 anyway that are worth watching. There are some fringe channels that I actually really like, but here we go. So my friend Josh Flowers from Aviation 101, I actually did a podcast with him last week, an interview, which was really good, but he and I spent some time together and did an Alaska series. If you haven't seen that, go check it out. It's 12 parts. It's like Netflix quality stuff. So definitely go check that out. Amazing, amazing series from Josh. I've worked with Flight Chops before. For some reason, I'm like in his top 3 videos. I think there's one of them I'm not in, but I'm pretty directly involved in many of his videos that did well. Not that it was because of me, okay? I'm not saying that. It's more just by chance, but Steve Flight Chops, he does a good job. Steve Olin Knievel, a lot of people like him and his flying, his IFR flying down in Florida, Georgia too. So he does a good job. It seems like he's mostly grounded right now. I do like JP the Kandurist. I like Super Aero. You guys probably haven't heard of him before. And what else? Gosh, I know I'm going to offend someone. Oh, gosh. Jason Miller, The Finer Points. He's actually one of my favorite channels. More in line with me. He's an instructor and does this quite a bit. So I really, really like what he does. Matt Guthmiller does great stuff. You guys have heard of all these people probably. And anyway, yeah. So I enjoy all those people. Trent Palmer, you know, pretty typical stuff. But they're all great. If you guys actually go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/angleofattack, you'll find a list of my favorites on the right-hand side, the people that I added to my channel there, okay? So they're all pretty dang good. And I hope I didn't leave anyone out. Definitely didn't intend to do that. Haven't flown in 12 years. Any advice for getting back into it? I would approach that far away from aviation. I would approach it as though you're starting again. Obviously, you have the license, right? And you have the ability to get there quickly, but you're going to need to get a medical again. You're going to need to get your flight review, which is really what I'm saying is like a lot of your initial training you're going to do again with takeoffs and landings and maneuvers and all those things. Flight planning is totally different now. It's all done on an iPad with ForeFlight. It's totally different and actually very helpful. So take it one step at a time, okay? I think that's my biggest thing, is looking at being out of it for 12 years and me saying, hey, you kind of need to start over is pretty overwhelming. But just start from the very beginning, and that is find a local flight school or talk to several instructors and just tell them and start. Like, schedule your first ground lesson, do that. Schedule your first flight, do that. Build some feedback off of that. Study, come back, do the second one, then the second one ground, second one flight. So chip away at it, okay? It's not going to happen overnight, but you can definitely get there. So keep working at it. Don't get overwhelmed and be out of it again for another 12 years, okay? That's what I don't want to see. Just take it one little step at a time. Basically, this is asking how to have a flight experience in Alaska. I'm a commercial pilot in Argentina. For anyone watching, if you visit Alaska, just contact me at angleofattack.com. I do often fly with people that are just visiting. We can do some flights in the mountains, for example, even just a few hours, even just an hour. It's always really worth it for people because it's so beautiful. And I wish I had had that perspective earlier on in my life. Like, if I'm going to vacation somewhere, why wouldn't I go and use my pilot license, go up with an instructor, and just view the area from the air? I think that's such a cool concept. So definitely just come and talk to me and we'll figure something out. Can an Indian private pilot license be converted to an FAA PPL? Most or many licenses can be converted to an FAA PPL. You can see more information about that on the FAA website about that process. The private pilot license is a little bit easier to transfer over than, say, like a commercial license. So just go look at those step-by-step processes and they'll show that to you. Would I ever fly for a commercial airline? That's not my plan. I think that I have a lot of other talents and I enjoy business as well. I enjoy living in my small town. I enjoy being with my family. A lot of those things would be sacrificed if I was going to go for the airline. So I just think that I found a really cool corner and niche in aviation and I'm enjoying it. And I don't have any plans to go to the airlines. I think I can be very useful elsewhere. Not that that's not a great path. Like, I definitely wanted to go for that path at some point, but eventually I just realized that some other things in my life weren't going to be very conducive for it. Any technique for a short field landing precision that has worked well for you? I mean, just a couple things. Thinking outside the box is you aim before your actual landing point. So be very cognizant of your energy in your airplane, because if you have a lot of extra airspeed and you come down and you try to flare, even if it's early, that round and flare early before your touchdown point where you'll settle on, and you have too much energy, you're just going to keep floating and floating and floating and floating, and you go way beyond your point. Okay, use ground effect to your advantage. So aim before. Once you get in ground effect, that's going to stretch you a little bit more with that cushion, if you will. So that's helpful. But my big thing is be on target early. All right, get that speed, that energy under control, and then your power for a precision landing becomes your number one control. The airplane should be nice and trimmed. So get it trimmed to where it basically flies hands off and you can make little adjustments, but then your power becomes your target control. Add more power and you see your target move down the runway. Reduce the power, you see your target move toward you. Now, we don't want to see it moving that much. What we want to do is be able to perceive the little tiny changes we can make with just a little bit of power. So we move the power. No one would be able to hear that. You wouldn't even be able to hear it, but you feel that you're reducing just a little bit based on being, in this case, reducing. You would be stretching it too far. So you're reducing. So you bring that target back toward you. Okay. Pushing the target away, pulling the target toward you. That's how it would work. If you're on speed, on target, on glide slope, everything, then that power becomes your number one control. And aiming, your aim point is before that that actual touchdown point, because you're going to be stretching it through ground effect. Okay. Not a lot of people realize that the power works in that way, but that's how I have taught my students. And I think it is a pretty good thing to do. Do you think simulators like X-Plane 11 hurt or help a student pilot? I think net, it is positive. And we talked about this on that webinar I did the fourth flight last Friday. Just this past Friday, they're going to put up that recording soon. It's net positive. You can get into some bad habits, and I think you got to be careful with that you aren't building negative habits. But I think there are a lot of positives from it. You can do communications, you can do flight planning, you can do everything that is very realistic. And if you approach a simulator in a realistic way, then it is absolutely helpful. It's not great at like VFR landings and some maneuvers and a handful of things, but there are a lot of things it is great at. So I think net positive, you're going to do pretty well. I use simulators a lot as a teenager, and I feel like my private pilot was really easy, but I don't feel like that's because I was a good pilot. I think it's because the simulators really helped me out a whole lot, and I studied hard and I put in the work. It wasn't that I was anything special. I don't think there are many special people out there when it comes to flying. Like, you've got to put in the work. All right, everyone. Thank you for coming to this episode of Ask the CFI. It was great to have you here, and I hope that you learned something or got a little assistance. If you guys do need anything, even in the comments here, feel free to ask. Please subscribe to YouTube and turn on that notification bell. If you're listening to the podcast, also subscribe. That's a great place. I'm putting it on the podcast as well, because this is fantastic podcast content. Just good to listen to while you're doing other things. And you can find more of anything we do at angleofattack.com. We do private and instrument ground school currently. We're working on commercial and CFI during a later time, but private and instrument for now. I'm really proud of those courses. I think they are different than anything else out there. And I definitely try to help you guys get across the finish line in a positive way, get the written test done, but also prepare you well for flight training. I also do Checkride ACE, which is a Checkride preparation course. There's really nothing out there like it. I just want you guys to be ready for your Checkride and confident going into your Checkride, well-studied, etc. And so Checkride ACE is a location to get that direct feedback and training for just the Checkride. And I'm sharing a lot of things throughout the week, mostly on Instagram, where I'm sharing just stories of what we're doing here at Angle of Attack, things that are coming out, actual flying. I might go flying this afternoon. I hope so. And just a lot of great stuff on Angle of Attack. I do like photography as well. I love video stuff, but I love photos as well. So we have some of that on Instagram as well. Anyway, hope you guys are doing good. I hope you find the motivation and the fortitude to stick to things through this time. I know things are pretty tough, and I do send my best wishes to you wherever you are, that you and yours can remain happy and healthy through this process. And for those of you that are displaced from a job or anything, I really hope things work out and you find a way to get through this, okay? Let me know if there's anything I can do for you. So I will talk to you guys next week on Ask the CFI. And then you can get this recording, or rather today's recording. Anyway, it's kind of this weird process. We keep getting more of it, but every Monday, come back for another Ask the CFI. All right. Talk to you guys next time. Until then, throttle on.